Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back. And it is today a show that I can't even speak. I'm so excited. I'm like a little kid on Christmas morning. Here's what's going on. Let me download everybody so we're on the same page. I started making a Victor Wembanyama video a couple weeks ago. It's out on the YouTube channel. I did this because I have been following Wemby since last season in France. We did a couple videos last year. We did a video for the NBA. We looked at him at the beginning of the season, and then the Spurs just became almost unwatchable. Like, what are they doing? What's happening? Who are they playing? They're not playing point guards. They're not. I've seen enough. I can't take it. And then, like a month and a half ago, he just started playing like a madman. They finally moved Trey Jones into the starting lineup. They moved Wemby to center. I started watching again. And I needed someone to come in and talk to me and hold my hand and figure out what I was seeing, because I just could not believe what I was seeing. I don't think words can put it into perspective. So to go through this journey together, I could not think of a better person. The one, the only, J. Kyle Mann of The Ringer. Kyle, you just made a Victor Wembanyama video yourself. Are we going to be able to make it through this podcast without saying just some incredibly outlandish things to other people that sound completely normal and reasonable to us?
Yeah, I think you and I have had this situation before with some players in the past. Of whenever a player comes out of the gate and just does things that you've never seen before, whenever they come out and they're just kind of resetting, you know, benchmarks that you even thought were possible. I think it's natural to kind of, I always said that I huddle up with the people that I trust the most to tell me that I'm crazy. I mean, that's generally, you know, when you need that in your life, I think, in general, like just in the broad sense, you need people to be like, hey man, you need exercise, or people that give you like the come to Jesus at some point. But like with Wemby, yeah, and basketball in general, I find myself in this situation where I'm like, this feels crazy. I need to run this by somebody. And I think you and I, what's funny, I think we discovered that we were both making a Wemby video, I don't know, it was like 10, 12 days ago or something like that, right? I mean, you've been just, I don't even know how you're doing it. You've been a madman putting out the Wemby videos lately.
I could do a Wemby video like every 2 weeks, I think. I think we've made five. It is a combination of the stuff we're going to talk about today, the curiosity and just how good he is and what's happening. And then he keeps changing. He had to say, he's like a sponge. I mean, maybe we should start here, because this is in a way the most tantalizing thing to me. I think the caveat with any of these players and anything that we're going to say today is health, right? Players have to play long careers. They have to hit their prime. They can't have injuries that sidetrack them. And so far, knock on wood, Wemby has had a trajectory that's been healthy in the last couple seasons. And you go back to where he was in France last year, and by the end of the season, Kyle, he's playing out there last year with names that were former NBA players, big basketball names of the international scene, playing really good talent, playing men, 25, 30-year-old veterans, right? And he's having this massive impact footprint. He's carrying his team. He carries his team all the way to the French finals, even after they lose former Boston Celtics point guard Tremont Waters. Like, there's a lot of talent out there, okay? And then he comes in, and I saw the same thing. I saw his first summer league game, two rows off the court. And it's like the speed, he talks about it right after the game. He's like, the speed of the game was a little faster than I was accustomed to. I'm going to have to adjust to that. And then like a couple months later, he just completely adjusts to that. Like, this is where my brain is starting to kind of go haywire with, he's just turned 20 years old. Can he just keep adding things and keep learning? And we'll get to the passing, because I think it's reflective of this, but the ceiling is hard to kind of rein in right now. In the video, I called it analyst vertigo, and that's very much how I feel.
Whenever we're both parallel, like working on a video, I mean, I go out of my way to not watch your stuff just because I trust your opinion so much that I don't want to be influenced. And I do that with a lot of like basketball people out there. I'm like, I have to finish before I gain a lot. I don't know if you're like this, but like I gain a lot of my like, a lot of my basketball thinking is through direct conversation. I'm always hesitant to read people because I'm like, I don't want that. I'm just very careful. I think I had a conversation with a musician buddy of mine one time where I was like, you ever listen to this? And it was a band that was like a direct peer of theirs. And he was like, I can't. Like he was just saying he had certain periods where he was like, I can't. I know they're great. I'm not going to be able to do it until, because, you know, he didn't want to be influenced by it. And I think that's it's almost like a form of respect, like the highest form of respect, but which, you know, I have for you. But like when we were working on that parallel, I was like curious to see what you were going to come away with. And we hit a lot of similar beats, like very similar. But one of the ones that made me laugh was in our conversation, when you said you had analyst vertigo, one of the things I cut from my video just for time was I'd said I was wandering in the fog. That's what I felt like. And that speaks back to what we were talking about before, which is just, and the reason for that is, and I don't know if you want to start here. I think I texted you this and you were like, don't stop. You just like cut me off. You're like, don't say that. Put the cards on the table, man. I mean, like, I think you know, guys come into the league and, you know, I'm doing my rookie rankings and I'm, you know, mapping out what everybody is, it top 200 player, they're what I think they'll do from the age 25 to 28. Is it all-star, whatever? Wimby, cards on the table. I mean, maybe we'll lead with this and cause some people to bristle, but like, what's the ceiling, man? I mean, like, I don't know what to take off the table. Like, you said health is the main factor here. You just kept texting me, just stay healthy, just stay healthy, just stay healthy. Do you think, I might as well just say it. I mean, I might get struck by lightning. I mean, is it on the table for him to be the most impactful, most successful NBA player ever?
Yes. I'm glad you said it. I can just say the yes part. I don't think we get aggregated, which is nice. I don't like
nobody cares.
Nobody cares. I mean, it's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. No, in all seriousness, this is where my mind is going. We might as well start here and then we can get into the particulars and talk it through at a more granular level. But like, this guy at a high level could be the best defender in the league very clearly, like historical level kind of defensive impact. And then all you need to be kind of a GOAT candidate traditionally is to be a really good all-starry kind of offensive player. But there are things happening with his offense, and I'm not saying they're, you know, very, very highly likely outcomes, but there are things happening with his offense where you go like, whoa, could you build an entire elite offense around his presence on the court? And we've never really had that. We've never had like the best defensive player in the league by a landslide, and then an offensive player who's like in the conversation for one of the better offensive players of all time. And that combination to me, I mean, first of all, it easily puts you in the GOAT peak conversation. But the whole concept of like, where's the ceiling right now as he's only just turned 20 years old? I mean, it's soft, it's squishy. Kyle, there's not a hard ceiling there when I watch him. And it's just, I think that's surprising to a degree in the sense that it goes back to what I was saying about him being a sponge. His IQ, his feel for the game, he's clearly cerebral, and the way he can process this information and then grow, if that keeps happening, like, I think the most interesting part of what I got into in my video was the motor and the off-ball stuff.
That was a great
point. Like,
the motor was... Yeah,
crazy.
The off-ball stuff I noted too, and it was like... I like that we both got to that. But those plays are just... They're not subtle. I mean, I don't think it's a... But I... yeah, the motor was a really good point. I was glad you brought that up. Go ahead.
Well, I had to cut for time because when you show motor plays, they take 8-10 seconds, the guy sprinting down the court and then changing direction. So I ended up cutting sort of an entire like dedicated motor section of plays that I had. But if you watch the video, you'll notice he's moving a lot. And there are plays, Kyle, where like he'll just sprint down the court before everyone, get into the post, switch sides to go to the other side with the ball, spin and expect a lob. Like it just keeps going. And if you have that motor on offense and defense, these are the kinds of skills that you can't really quote unquote teach. And then you combine those with feel. And it's like, oh my God, how are you going to, if this guy ever learns to shoot well, how on earth would you stop him?
I cut this out. We'll just talk about all the things we cut out. I was trying to keep it to a tight 10. I've been trying to move quicker these days as people have noticed and I appreciate it. But I cut this out because I was like, what it reminded me of was, I don't know, have you ever booked an Airbnb? Have you ever gone on, this isn't sponsored by VRBO or Airbnb. I'm open to that. Thanks. But have you ever gone on their app or on their interface at all?
Well, they're not sponsoring this. So I've gone and booked at a third party reservation non-hotel site. Yes. Continue your story. Yes.
Any third party reservation site works. But you know, when you go through there, sometimes we've had this experience. I'll be like, I want a house, I want it to have this, I want it to have this, I want it to have this. And you watch the available options, it just keeps going down, down, right, down, down. And I keep thinking, when you were describing, I made this point in my first video about Wimby too, it's just overlaps, the filters of players. Like you mentioned, we've talked in the past about O1 D1s, players that are defensive anchors, but also hubs on offense. That's just what I mean. LeBron has had moments where he's had to do that and done it. He typically picks his spots a little bit. I guess the 2015 one was the one where we were like, he had to do it and he did it because it was like do or die, brass tacks. Has he ever done it for a whole season, really? I wouldn't say so.
I'm not sure anyone's ever done it. I think there's spots where players can be that, like Kevin Garnett on the Timberwolves. You know, you can be that. But the reality is, you want, on an idealized high-level championship team, you want him to be the second-best defender. LeBron, do you want to overtake? You know, 2013 Heat, could you argue that he's your top-tier defensive anchor? Yeah, I don't know, maybe, but you typically, it's like 0-1 D2 or D1 O2, and to have a guy who you can look at 20 years old, Kareem maybe is the great traditional example, because I think back in his day,
you're Kareem, talking like 72 Kareem?
Exactly, yeah. Like early 70s Kareem, I think you could make the argument, was a legitimate, like, in that game, offensive anchor engine and also defensive anchor. But, I mean, otherwise, we're just talking about, like, fairy tale stuff to the point where we're not even 15 minutes into this and there's already going to be some people in the comments who are like, you guys got to slow your roll. And it's like, in some sense, you have to trust that this is all Kyle and I do all the time for decades. And we can try to go through the players who have elicited this. There's not many, but there's just some crazy stuff going on with Wembanyama right now that really is warrants this kind of discussion without it actually sounding like, it's going to sound like ridiculous hyperbole, but if it's not, that's the thing. He's like already really good. He just turned 20 years old.
Well, you know, the key thing to always put out there is, and I said this in the initial kind of eval I did of him, I was just like, yes, this is the ceiling. These are the flashes. This is what could pan out. Is he going to stay healthy? Don't know. Is he going to continue to get better? Don't know. We don't know those things. They have to happen. All we're saying is that, like, the template and the outcomes are, they're not ruled out. And it usually gets ruled out pretty quickly for guys, as we've talked about. Like, the train leaves the station quickly. The one thing I wanted to say with the search filter thing is, like, when we talk about the overlaps of the O1, D1, the passing, the defense, like, all the different little intangibles that he has, the one that you mentioned first, I think, could be the separator. And that is, he's smart, man. I mean, you listen to him. I was telling you, I was like, he seems like an Ivy League type person. He seems very, very above average. I mean, you know, how people speak is, that's a tricky way. That's a tricky way to evaluate, you know, someone's intelligence. But I think if you look at the way that he like clearly reflected on that first game that you talked about, which was a great example. It's one thing to say that. A lot of players say things like that. They have, you know, reasons for, like, why they don't. Things get in the way of your self-improvement. I'm sure every person listening could relate to that. But Victor seems incredibly focused. He just seems like he runs a little hot sometimes, but he seems like he has the right kind of temperament too. Like, very competitive, but also very thoughtful. Like, I think that could be a huge, huge part of this, is that he's just a really smart kid. Like, I hate to call him a kid, but he's just a smart, smart person.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There was a play in a game with Mets 92 last year where, and I have it in one of the videos I did, where... first time down the court, they double him in the post, and so the double comes from a certain place, and he either makes like a basic pass or like struggled with the double, I don't remember. Next time down, he knew exactly what was coming and makes this like beautiful wraparound layup pass because he knows exactly how they're going to play the coverage after one time. And that's the kind of thing that jumps off the screen to me when I'm thinking of like, how does an athlete process the game in real time? How do they learn from repetitions? And we've seen, especially in the pace and space era, like from LeBron James to Nikola Jokic to Luka Doncic, like the better you are at being able to dissect that at speed. Because that's the thing when we sit at home, sometimes we forget about like athletics. You don't have time to think about it when you're out there. It's just you can think about it in between the games. You can think about it in between the plays. But it's these guys that have this processing power to kind of slow the sport down as they play it. I think that's a big thing to look for. The other thing you said that was so interesting is last season, as interesting as Wemby was to me, last season coming into the league without playing an NBA game yet, we were still at a place in my head where it's like, okay, yes, in theory, you have the foundation, you have the blueprint that could give you like a GOAT level peak that we've never seen before. But a lot of things have to happen. Mm-hmm. And now what we've done is usually, as you said, we go in the other direction. The guy plays in the league and you're like, Evan Mobley, how are we going to get you to shoot? Yeah. You know, like, right? Jaren Jackson, how are we going to get you under control? Usually it goes the other way. And that's not a knock on those specific players or any of these players. Luka Doncic, how do we get you to be a better defender? It's not a knock on any of those guys. It's the reality of having to check every box. And what's happening with Wemby is we're going in the other direction. I feel like it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Like, we're going the wrong way. How does he know where we're going? That's ridiculous. what's happened is Wemby's come out, and it feels like he's adding things. It feels like he's going, actually, I can just be like a 7.5 foot tall Steph Curry and just run around in circles and you can throw lobs to me. Let's start there. How are you going to stop that? Then I'll work on my other stuff.
Him like adding the wrinkles. I think this like short kind of snapshot that we've seen of him, I always say like, you know, like, sequential thinkers is kind of what you were alluding to with like LeBron obviously is like the master just chess player. Jokic obviously is at that level too, on the playoff level in a series too. There's a sort of a stuffy highfalutin quote, you know, Francois Truffaut. You ever read much about him? Well, he had a quote that I really like where he was just talking about directors, where he said that like a director tells you who they are in the first 150 feet of film, basically. And I was thinking about that, and I never used it in a piece or anything because I was like, I knew what the reaction would be. People like, dear God, you insufferable douche. But I love that quote.
I put in a horse racing clip in my last Victor Wembanyama video.
Francois Truffaut. I love that clip though, because I think that like early on, guys do tend to show you who they are if we pay attention. And I think that like his adaptability, which I always say is like something with like prospects I try to look for, is, and it's hard to see. You have to really lean in and look, read between the lines of like, what were they improving at? How did they go about it? How did they adapt? How quickly? I think that's what we're seeing with him, is like the learning part of it. You said in 25 games. I mean, were some of those things, I want to go through with you and like run through like most likely to least likely like things of like, we're talking about the template of how he could get there. I want to run through those and like just kind of gauge our optimism or pessimism about those things. But if this is who he is, if this is how he's going to improve, I think that's going to impact how we feel about those categories. And The off-ball stuff's insane. Do you want to just pick one? You want to start? Was that a good way to go about it? Or how do you?
Yes, this is fantastic. Let's do it. Do you want me to pick the first category?
Well, it's your show. Yeah, I mean,
well, you were on a roll. What's the thing?
What's the most? I mean, let's start with the obvious thing that we know we're going to be able to bank on, assuming that he stays. Well, all of this will assume, obviously, that he stays healthy. The thing that we know that is most likely to be elite level. I mean, it's going to be defensive anchor. I think that's the thing. Yes. That's just, and that's by a function of just his size, his IQ. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I'm wondering like where he gets better and what that looks like. And I think it touches on a couple areas. I think it touches on the first thing I actually wrote down, and maybe we should start here, is physical frame growth, like strength, size. Does he fill out? Does he add muscle? What does he weigh at? What does he weigh when he plays in his prime? From like 24 to 28, is he much more muscular than he is? Does he stick with this sort of like slithery Kareem build? You know, you guys add strength. You don't have to add a lot of size to add strength. So you can add strength and that will come naturally. We both talked about the balance a couple times. He's this guy who's this just unbelievable. He's like an alien of a human being. I sometimes can't believe he's a real human being. I'm like, wait, you're 8 feet. Anthony Davis is 7.5 feet. He's got these freakish arms, and you see him make these plays that you almost have to, you cannot believe he blocked the shot. You're like, wait a second, how did he get there? His offensive rebounding, his lob threats. We can have a whole sidebar. Anthony Davis, obviously underrated by so many folks historically. I was just playing around with some of these all-time playoff scoring efficiency numbers that add your own offensive rebounds when you clean up shots and stuff. And like Anthony Davis, one of the most efficient big volume playoff scoring stretches going from 2015 in New Orleans all the way through his early Lakers years. So that he's 7.5 feet. Wemby is another half foot, Kyle. He's another 6 more inches.
Yes, there's a few things to unpack in what you said. I was curious. I mean, the balance thing. You know, I'm a armchair biomechanic. I'm interested in it. I love talking about it. So I grant you that frequently I'm talking out of my ass. But like watching him, it seemed pretty. That was something that didn't pop as much to me when I watched him with Mets 92. I knew he was coordinated. I was like, he's clearly. But the extent of his balance. Really has blown me away. Like in terms of like his ability to take contact. Now, I think the removal of Zach Collins out of there has just put him in space with more of these individual matchups. I understood why they wanted to put Collins there to maybe protect him a little bit. But the fact that he's able to make these reach for these plays, that his timing is so good, his sense for how to avoid body to body, like he meets guys head on when it's needed. There was a game against, I think it was against the Rockets, like down the stretch, there was a play in transition where he just met Jabari Smith head on and blocked him. And then there was a loose ball and he reaches over and you saw both ends of how he can protect the rim. So he does it some, but I guess my point is just that like his ability to sort of hold up and still maintain his dexterity and coordination and like ambidextrousness against these big physical players. Like Joel said that he didn't bother him. Did you watch that game?
Did you
hear what Embiid said? I grant you, Joel Embiid had 70 points in that game. But, I mean, there were clear... Did you hear what Joel said about Wemby after the game?
I only think I heard about that, the one quote that you just said about how he didn't bother him or something. What was the detail? Did he go into more or elaborate on that?
Well, I think Bontemps asked him the question, and I was glad that he did. I was like, if I'd been in the room, I wanted to be like, define bother, Joel, because
right,
it clearly
right.
made him think, you know, and I think like CPU just sort of usage in basketball, I think is really critical that like he clearly, you mentioned the extra amount of, you know, the extra inches, that 6-7 inches, whatever it is, that he has, you can just see him eating up the CPU of the players that are around him. Like just him being present, like, there's almost like a magnet. I was trying to, somebody explained to me like the way airbags work one time, that there's like a ball bearing suspended in like, have you ever seen this before? Like, it's like there's a magnetism that suspends the ball bearing. Like, that's more about, like, forget that. That's more about his balance. But
this is what Wemby does to you.
Well, You and I have talked about, and I have talked about how Bill Walton said that Kareem had like a Scottie Pippen body. The body part of it is interesting to me. I mean, I think he has that body type where he's still able to like leverage his length and stuff without being compromised physically. Like, it, like I've just been really impressed with all of that.
So,
I know I'm, I went wild there, but yeah.
Well, let me try to rein that in and summarize it. The thing that jumps out to me is he's spinning and turning and jumping and doing all these things and has this incredible control and awareness of where his own body is in space. Proprioception. But
you
then,
avoided saying it. I didn't say it. I didn't want it to, but I did.
I know. I had to get it out there. There's a drink. We got to play drinking games on Thinking Basketball. That's how it works. But the other thing is so many players like that with the higher center of gravity. Kevin Garnett had this. Anthony Davis himself had this. You get a little bit of the Bambi on ice because they get pushed around so easily at this point in time. And that's where I think this connects to this first issue with me of like strength, size, growth. He'll never be a player probably that Giannis Antetokounmpo's you. He'll never play like that. He'll never try to truck you from a place of pure strength as his like superpower. It's more about how much does he add so when he's spinning off balance, he's actually never really off balance anymore. I think it was an underrated part of Kareem's game as well. Kareem, in Kareem's case, if we stick with these like alien-like, because Kareem's listed at 7'2", and it's always worth bringing this up as a reminder. Kareem was 7'2 barefoot. So he could have been listed at like 7'4". So when you see 7-footers like Hakeem Olajuwon, he's like 6'10", probably barefoot, 6'10 and change. And when you look at photos, you'll notice like, why is Kareem 4 inches taller than Hakeem? It's because he's 7'2 barefoot and he's legit 4 inches taller. Wemby's like another 2 inches. More importantly, his functional height is everything we've been talking about is actually 8 feet. And so Kareem added a lot to his base. His legs got bigger. He got stronger that way through the core. Both of these guys, another thing about Wemby that has checked a box for me is like, man, the dude can like do splits. So he's like prioritizing mobility and pliability.
He's way as part ahead.
Way ahead on that kind of stuff. I wish someone had told me that when I was 19. I wouldn't be so broken and injured.
Well, that's one of the things about him being ahead and having access to that kind of like just being mindful about his body and taking care of it. Like, that's the thing that's kind of driven me nuts about people who are belly aching about the Chet not being an actual rookie thing. They were like, well, Chet had access to pro. I'm like, guys, Wemby has been taken care of like the Hope Diamond since he was like, give me a break, and playing like professional. Like, I'm just sick. I don't want to get on that. I'm just sick of people saying
you're not excited about the fact that a player playing his first year is not a rookie.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled about it. It's I'm just the discussion. I honestly don't really care who wins Rookie of the Year. They're both great players. It's not going to affect my appreciation. I know people wear it like a badge. You want to celebrate something. You want your guy to get the respect. I just feel like we're so past that. It's just a formality. Like
Kyle,
and any other year, we'd be going insane about Chet. Like Chet would be, and I am going insane about Chet. So it's like it's not an either or thing here. It's just like Wimby's just so. The misfortune of being in a class with a guy who has a goat ceiling. Like, that's just kind of what happens. Yeah.
Poor the whole
Dwayne Wade, right? Yeah.
No, I was.
Carmelo.
I texted you this. I think every time I hear the you're only a rookie the year after you're drafted thing, I'm like, man, they should have given Arvydas Sabonis Rookie of the Year in 1985. And then again in 1986 when he was drafted again. Just put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Sabonis was mentioned. Drink. We're going down the list of likely to most. So we're confident about. I mean, his switchability. How are you feeling about that? I mean, it's.
I feel great about it. But
he doesn't have to mirror switch because he has that cushion. Like I was saying, like he doesn't. He can hang back and be conservative and still impact the play.
The way he covers ground is incredible, and I think so. The other side of the defensive coin to me is like what I would call defensive feel. Or timing, he errs. If we think of like a spectrum of just going after everything and going after nothing, maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. is on one end of the spectrum, right? Just going after everything when he comes into the league. Wemby is somewhere in the middle to me. He is very calculating about when he goes over and chases or attacks something. And I think that's a feel that he's going to develop. When do I need to be Hakeem Olajuwon around the basket on this play? And if you're not familiar with what I mean by that, Hakeem would just uncork all of a sudden three blocks. And he's like, nope, no one's getting a shot off while I'm near the rim right now. There are a lot of possessions you see Wemby. He's on the other side of the rim. There's some boxing out. There's some jostling. A play happened. And he won't go over and just recklessly chase that block. So I think the feel and the timing around the basket and then on switch stuff, I think that's stuff that can come. I think it's pretty likely that develops. You know, to be clear, if it doesn't develop, I think we're talking about a great defender. But as crazy as it is to say, because he's only 20, I don't think he would ever get into the GOAT defensive conversation. But I think it's pretty likely that this stuff develops where you get some combination of his strength and size, and his ability to dial in the timing and feel comes as he gets more experience. And the last thing I'll say here, Kyle, is it goes back to something he's done to every professional player that I've seen him play against. He has such a great sense of, again, back to his body and space, of his own length. He has such a great sense for it. He blocks so many shots with his fingertips. He's got these incredibly long hands. And so when players on the perimeter size him up and go to shoot, they just don't even understand how their shot got blocked. I mean, Kevin Durant, the first time he played him, it was in the video we did at the beginning of the season. He blocked Durant's jumper, the Kevin Durant's jumper. And Durant thought he had space. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Durant's hit that dribble pull-up over AD. So, I mean, that's how, if you imagine the level of confidence that you have in your shot, I would say that's one of the more ironclad things to be confident about in basketball is Kevin Durant's ability to shoot over people. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And I think what you're saying about, like, I talk about this in the video about just him spooking people, it's hilarious. Like, I did not have enough time for all the clips of him, like, affect. And I think what if you've never played basketball, you know, like when you play against somebody that long, the recalibration that happens is just hard to deal with. And I think over time, people are going to like start to maybe figure out ways to poke at him and things like that. But even in that Bucks game, Giannis had a couple times where he was like, I know if I hit him here, it's going to create the teeny amount of space that I need to go with my right hand on the left side and sneak this by him. It was like a couple plays later, Vic was like, nope, not letting you have that. And he just like angled his body and then blocked Giannis and then blocked him at the rim. I just think those things are the types of things that the Goberts, the ADs, they do. You just and it stops showing up in the stats at some point because maybe we'll develop tracking stats for this play went at this player. Maybe they already have it. I don't know if the Hawkeye thing, I know the Hawkeye thing was a disaster, but like maybe they'll develop it where it's like, okay, the tracking pattern went towards this player and then went away. Because right now I don't think we totally represent that in defense. Do you think we do? I don't know.
We have it in what's missing. We have it in the counterfactual. So we can look at stuff like when Wemby's on the court versus Wemby being off the court. And we should give a shout out to Cody, who just loves these numbers. He loves these rim protection numbers. If you look at that for certain players, you can notice like, oh, wait a second. The number of shots they take around the basket when Wembanyama's on the court goes way down. The reason, of course, is because players will get to that spot and be like, actually, this 8-footer doesn't feel very good with Wemby lurking right here in the drop coverage. Same thing with like the tracking data that you see on our site for subscribers at patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. We'll have like shots, and I think you cited this exact figure in your video, shots defended within 6 feet of the basket. We look at a multi-year sample across the league. And what sometimes you notice with the Goberts of the world, you already see it with Wembanyama, is the number of shots they defend is very low. The defensive percentage is off the charts. It's like 99th percentile. The players will shoot 11 or 12 percentage points worse than you expect. But it's only like 4 per 36. And the reason is because players are afraid to shoot around a player that's that effective. So it's hard stuff to capture, but I think if you look in the negative space, that's where you really see it. Yeah,
you're right. That was true with I guess I was thinking like literal paths. Like it would be funny to see if someone could track the literal paths of the players. I think that's more what I was meaning. But like
Todd Whitehead could get on that. Yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah, there'd be a lot of manual tracking if you could get on that one. But the only other one was Second Spectrum had they had the thing where you could see, you know, actions involving this player, more specific tracking data like that, and AD would always be a lot lower. You'd be like, oh, what's about that? You know, it's like no, it's not scheme. It's preference. It's fear. But you know, he spooked Giannis. Giannis shot a few like hurried floaters. But I was gonna make this point in the video, and I cut it again. Drink. Chet and Wimby both have this in common, is that like this goes both ways. You know, people are gonna start poking at them like the Raptors testing the fences in Jurassic Park and trying to figure out where the weaknesses are. It goes both ways. Wimby and Chet are both, you know, I know Chet's another story, but like they're gonna figure stuff out too. You know, Wimby is learning personnel kind of preferences and things like that. So it's that I think he has working for him too.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's the next category, would you say?
I think we have to talk about passing.
Yep. You think that's your next most confident thing, you would say?
We're sorting most to least confident.
We did not prepare for this, so we're just in the moment. So I don't know if I'd put that number two. I'd say, well, I mean,
I kind of think I would put, I mean, I don't know what other categories you have.
I don't know either. You could start to have sort of a taxonomy like discussion.
Well, shooting,
we didn't agree on.
Right.
Well, shooting is big. Yeah.
Outside shooting is big.
Finishing, amazing. I think finishing is two. Finishing is two, right? And then shooting.
Well, how much does he even need to grow in the finishing area?
No, I'm saying that's the next most. Like, you want to talk about proprioception? That was the area that it blew my mind.
Yeah.
He had a play against the Suns early in the year. He caught the ball. It was a broken play, I think, or it was like a bad pass. He was on the right side of the basket. I tried to find this clip. I couldn't find it, but he had his back to the basket and just sort of like did the, you know, the Rondo right hand on the left side shot. It's like his signature shot. He does that thing where he comes around the rim and shoots this weird, like he has his back to the basket and shoots this kind of backwards layup. Somebody out there know what I'm talking about. Wimby did this thing where he was on the baseline, had caught the ball, you could tell he like hadn't looked at the basket in a second, and without looking, just turned around and his hand went directly to the rim and shot like a little drop in. And I was like, that was when I started thinking about the proprio stuff, where I was like, this is insane. Like in traffic, they'll throw those like end zone post fade, whatever the route is called, where he catches it deep and without looking knows exactly where he is. Like I'd say the finishing, I think is, I'm higher on that than I even was coming into the season. He's impressed me so much with that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, are we saying that has room to grow, or are we saying that's already very likely solidified as something that we can kind of bank on as being, because it feels mostly baked to me. It feels like he'll clean it up a little bit, right? But lefty sweeping scoop shots.
No, we gotta talk about that.
He's thrown some hooks off the glass. Maybe here's a very specific subcategory of this category. Can he get a skyhook? Is that like a legitimate thing?
We gotta talk about this. Okay, so yes, he could. He's the one, and his hand size, I think, is why. That's the thing. You know, I'm not gonna get into the skyhook thing. People are probably sick of hearing about it. But like, I think he his control, I think he'll have his own version of it. And I didn't know, I hadn't heard anybody talk about this until I was lining up the clips next to each other. And I was like, Jesus, he's done this like 20 times. Like, he has that play where he's usually on the right side in the short corner where I think he's going to be unstoppable, like at some point. Like, that's going to be nothing to do with him. Like, you're not going to be able to do any, he can do anything from there. Pass, shoot eventually. But he does this thing where he'll throw like a stutter rip and go to the left across the lane. He'll hold the ball out, Ben, and like, you're not getting to it. You're not going to touch him. You might, and like, you're going to foul him if you try to. I think that's going to become an iconic move. You know the one I'm talking about, right? His arm looks like a freaking highlight racket at the end of a like a pool cleaner, and he like holds it out there, and he has crazy touch on it, man.
Yeah. No, I think the reality is the beat for beat Kareem skyhook is probably too slow. I mean, his quickness is another really interesting advantage that I kind of backed my way into at the end of the video. It's like, by the way, we haven't even talked about the fact that he just destroys people on the outside who are like 6'7" to 7 feet tall. It's really hard for them to stay in front of him sometimes. And he's a 7'4" dude, you know, rip step, stutter step, rocker step, reject a screen, crossover, all in like the space of half a second to just completely get by. We haven't even talked about that. But I think the mechanics of how he sets up a move like that around the basket are less important beat for beat to me than like there's some long arm, hooky, sweepy extension shot that he could potentially master that in today's game, if you got that thing, it's kind of like Jokic's little short nerf floater shots inside 8 feet. You get that thing up around 60% and just like, it's basically over. It just becomes incredibly difficult to slow you down in single coverage or in switches or things like that.
Yeah. Well, think about where the center of his body is and where the ball is. Like you're just not going to be able to like, it's going to be a help defender that might time it well, that might dig and get a hand on it. But yeah.
Or bother his landing, like, you know, charges, eating up the landing space, building walls. But that segues perfectly into the passing, which I think, again, if we had to put a confidence scale on this, like how much are we banking on it? I think there's a pretty good chance he becomes, in the heart of his career, a very good passer. I think there's a small but reasonable chance he's a great, like we talk about him as like, did you see that Wemby pass? Because again, he just turned 20 and he's already throwing some ridiculously nice passes. I think the expansion is everything we've talked about with tempo, timing, feel, and then you start manipulating and dictating to the defense. We haven't fully gotten there yet, but that's because he's only 20.
Yeah, you're right that it does segue because it's like he's going to have an awareness to sort of like the more people start to try to get, you know, clever, going back to his ability to learn and his processing. Hard to doubt that stuff. Hard to doubt that he's going to not pick that stuff up. And I'd ask you, like, you know, Jokic is, I'm not trying to like wish him out of the league because I love him so dearly, but I'm just thinking about like the timelines of their careers. Is there going to be a point where Wimby's the best passing big in the league? I think that's very possible. I'd say that's probably likely, Ben. I mean, I don't even think that's uncontroversial, I think. I mean, what's another?
You're touching the high end. I think you're touching the high end. Yeah.
What I mean, who else? I mean, well, Şengün's pretty freaking good. I mean, I'm trying to think of another like the level of creativity
of the current bigs in the league.
And we're talking 8 to 10 years from now, you know.
Yeah. So Sabonis will be basically gone.
I don't think he's even as close as creative. Like I always feel like Sabonis is much more of a technician. Like he doesn't have the same level of flair and creativity. I feel like very good passer, but I kind of put Şengün in a different category.
I'm just trying to list the good big man passers for this thought experiment. Part of the issue as I sort of scan our board on the website here is that like big Luka, Scotty Barnes, these guys aren't traditional big men anymore. So you have a lot of big players who aren't really playing that post role. But yeah, I mean, the guys currently in the league, how many sort of traditional big men could be better passers? It's certainly if you fast forward 8 years and you're eliminating all the players in their late 20s, I'm not sure there's anybody else in that like 25 or 26 under category that could match his ceiling. Now, whether he can hit that ceiling is, that's what we're trying to debate. Like, how likely is it? There's one play, Kyle. It's one of those plays you sneak in a video and just let breathe for itself. Like, you want to analyze it and you want to break it down, but you're like, I'm just going to throw this in there at the end with a little casual voiceover. I want to say it's against the Pistons. I can't remember who he's playing. He's in that right short corner that you just wax poetic about. And this is the whole thing of how this all fits together. They start to move a second defender toward him in help in the lane. Wemby faces up, because of course he's got a face-up jumper, whether it's accurate now or not, we'll talk about in a second. But he faces up, looks like he's in position to shoot because he's got a wall of defenders in front of him, and basically in the same motion, lobs it to the front of the rim, to the teeny window, to Zach Collins for the dunk.
He does that all the time. He does that all the time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, well, the fact that he can already shot pass at 19 and 20 years old, A, that reflects to me incredibly fast processing speed. B, that he's mapping the pieces on the court. And C, that means that I think we're headed to a place where he can anticipate and kind of dictate at that next stage of passing. So it fits with the first half of this podcast in the sense that the more defenses react to the scoring pressure he can put on them in different parts of the floor, the more that passing becomes something that just spikes your offense. It's like, think about him off ball. Well, if you throw extra help at him off ball and the first passer can't punish you, but you somehow like hit Wemby in the short roll or hit Wemby when two guys go to him on the block because you have to double because you can't switch. Now the interior passing is already a great interior passer. Now that decision making, that's the thing that spikes your offense. So yeah, it all fits together. And that, I think the passing is just
he's already demonstrated a really dynamic vocab for that. Like I think in like one of his first summer league plays, he went baseline and threw sort of a shovel pass in traffic to, I think it wasn't Sohan because he wasn't playing, but it was somebody on the Spurs summer league team. It might have been Chimpenny, but he did that, and I just went, oh boy, oh boy. I was like, because he got criticism, and I think this will be a segue to, I think, what people were sort of dinging him in the early part of the season was, you know, you looked at Chet's very defined parameters in his role and how efficient he was, and then people would look at the waist. You know, rookies with the car keys, you're going to get that with the, you know, Keontae's insane pick and roll, you know, usage, and Scoot and all these guys. You were getting that with Wemby, in addition to the just really weird, misoptimization. I don't even know what the word is. It was the opposite. They were trying to experiment and get those guys reps. I understand that, but like, the shooting part of it, I think, is the next part, is that like I feel like people really, really zeroed in on the shooting with him early on, and they were like, you know, Jesus Christ, this is a 7'4" Kevin Durant, which he loves, right, Kevin Durant. Right.
Yeah.
Both he and Chet do. I think some of the I guess this is where we should go from here. It's just like the confidence. Like I'm very, very, he's taken way, 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 way more dribble threes, unassisted threes, than Chet. Is that going to continue to be a thing? Is that a necessity of like him being on a team with like no passers that can't get him easy ones like they should? I guess that's the question for me, is like, what types of shots is he taking if this peak does take place? Does it clean up a lot? Does it, I don't know. Or does the shooting come around?
No, I think the shooting is a thing that could truly unlock it to like an all NBA or better offensive only player. We haven't even gotten to like, yes, okay, he might be the defensive player of the year, but on offense, how good can the offense be without him having that extra spatial threat out on the perimeter? How good can the offense be if you give him certain on-ball reps, or in playoff series you're inverting pick and rolls and playing with switch dynamics, but you don't have to worry about him hitting that pull-up three? I think it chips away a decent amount of value, but I also don't think he needs to be a 40% shooter, right? I even as a rookie, you go to the film now, you see possessions where he had at least one or two down the stretch in that Timberwolves game where they had the big comeback against Minnesota. Gobert like sags off the screening action because naturally that's what you would do. And he's like, oh, I have space to shoot. and I'm just going to hit this three. And also, Kyle, this is like a very thing between you and me, a very old school thing. Kind of feels like he has that big moment clutch kind of, like he loves it, right? We saw it in the Vegas showcase. We've seen it at other moments in the regular season. We saw it in that Phoenix game at the beginning of the year where they're on TNT, and it's like, all of a sudden, I'm a slightly better shooter at the end of the game because I'm like super dialed in.
He's a killer. He's a killer, man.
So all that stuff makes me think he doesn't really have to. He's an 81% free throw shooter right now as a 20-year-old rookie. Those are great indicators, but it's hard to like shoot 38 or 40% on a diet of pull-up threes, regardless of how big you are. It's hard to hit 38 to 40% volume threes as a spot-up guy if you're never in the corner. Because if you're wondering why I'm going there, like most great players don't get to hang out in the corner. They're doing stuff above the break, middle of the floor with the ball. So I don't think he needs to get there, but I've kind of moved to a place like if we're doing most likely to least likely, I think it's pretty likely, Kyle, that he's going to be a decent three-point shooter, and that enough might unlock everything I'm talking about. 34 to 35% on some volume. He's already shooting way better on pull-ups than catch-and-shoot threes you talked about off the dribble as a rookie. Small sample, but I don't know in his mechanics or the release on his shot, I don't know if it makes too much of a difference if he's the one dribbling versus the catch-and-shoot and moving into it. Obviously, the catch and shoot and moving into it pairs so well with his movement and his motor and the fact that he can back cut you and then take you back out to the perimeter and come off screen. He's like running centers off screens. And
you had a clip in this video that I just can't reckon with. I don't know what to do with it. Like the fact that, like, and I guess the level of respect for his jump shot will affect this, but the fact that he anticipated the close as a 7'4" guy and back, can you imagine Porzingis doing that? Can you imagine that?
I can, because Porzingis is kind of sneaky quick for his size.
Does he back cut closeouts like that, though?
I've never seen that technique. I'm sure it's happened.
Is that the one that you said you never seen that blew your mind? Is that
yeah,
the play?
Because he did it on a couple plays. It wasn't just that one play. I had a couple other plays where, for people who don't know what Kyle's talking about, he's picking and popping, and Wemby is popping out to the three-point line, and then he's waiting for the switch defender to come. Like, the switch defender's watching the ball, and like, oh, I got to kind of float back out to Wemby on the pop, and Wemby back cuts him right as he's doing that. And it's like, I don't know how you defend that. That feels impossible to defend without bringing a third defender into the action.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
He's able to get, like, I think another thing about his touch as a scorer that really just blows my mind, I think this might even have been in the Sixers game too, is, and I mentioned this in the video, is that he just gets this aberrational like extension and like is able to just throw these little flip shots with touch that are just crazy. He had one where like he caught it in transition and turned around and basically did like a full extension like baby hook and at the top of his arc just flicked it with his fingers and it just softly went off the glass. Like those types of plays, he had one where he just like he made Michael Porter Jr. look like he was like 5'6". Do you remember? It was like in traffic. It was like there were a couple different rebounds. He's tapped it to himself, and you could see MPJ's just like, "What? What do I like?" Like these players are being put in this situation. He had that like drop step dunk over Luke Kornet that I think I'd sent to you, where the reverse camera caught them coming up the floor, and Luke Kornet had this look on his face like, that's never happened to me before. Anyway, on the shooting and everything like that, I guess it's I need to go by and just kind of look at his dribble shooting numbers. The question is, like, early in the year, have those shots that were making him so inefficient, have they kind of like filtered out over the course of the year? Is his efficiency going to like change as we go because of the types of shots that he's getting? We mentioned this, his in his offensive game, since they've gotten Collins out of there, his drives and drive efficiency has gone to the moon. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy, man. I don't know. So shooting wise, we're landing on pretty confident, not rock solid like the other ones, but we're confident.
I think I'm pretty confident he gets to above that threshold as like a mid-level shooter. He could be higher. Obviously, there's space that it doesn't come along. We've seen that. But I think there's enough indicators that I'm like, man, if I had to bet, I think it's a pretty decent bet that he's not a terrible shooter in 5 years, especially with what we've seen in shooting growth and shooting coaches and everything we've seen in basketball. I love that we're talking about like him improving as a finisher. Shot 76% at the rim last month. I think it's 72% on the season, but of course, one of the things I was trying to figure out when making this video is like every stat has gone through the roof. How do I describe to people that like every stat we track over the course of the season is going through the roof? The off-ball stuff, I think like 3/4 of his offense is assisted. And normally you look at that and you go like, oh, he's very dependent on his teammates. And I'm like, yeah, he's dependent. He doesn't even have good passing teammates.
No.
If we could get him some good passing teammates, that number might go to 80% in the same way that like Shaq was secretly an off-ball weapon, right? Like if you tried to take away the post on Shaq, he spun backdoor. If you had the right passer or like side-to-side swing in the triangle, Shaq would move from one side of the block to the other. And in doing that, he would seal all the space with his strength and size. Wemby, it's the length and the quickness. That's what's happening in the paint. And there's just show. I should say, Chet Holmgren, I think he's unbelievable. I think he's absolutely, I think he is amazing. I don't like the fact that people pit these two players together. They're both great. I think I really hope if you've enjoyed our Wemby hour here that you can also give Chet his props, because I watch Chet and I ogle and I Google and I got, you know, I feel like Walt Frazier sometimes when I'm like, there's Chet spinning and winning and whining and dining. There he goes. But they're both great. But let's like finish by putting this in perspective. How many players in your basketball fandom, and maybe you have to go post-Jordan because this wasn't a thing before Jordan, how many players come along that you even go, yeah, I can see the bare-bone skeleton of like a GOAT-level peak? It's not that many, right?
I mean, that's what I was asking you before. In my lifetime, I mean, LeBron's the only one that
LeBron,
can think of.
LeBron's the first
Luka
one.
Gave me moments where I was just like,
yep.
What is going on here? Obviously, we all are familiar. We don't have to get into that. Like, the conversation about that. It's still amazing, all-time Hall of Famer, you know, crazy. But, like, I think LeBron's the only one. And I think I was, you know, I'm the same age as LeBron. So, I mean, I think early on, I was just thinking, like, just trying to figure out with the shooting, obviously, is the thing with him that's always. But, like, honestly, I feel like the physical stuff is probably more, is more where you could draw a line and be like, this could be an issue. And I think that the physical stuff is also plays in a lot to his shooting variables too. I think he's dealing with a lot more, he's spinning a lot more plates, I think, to become a better shooter. Like if you just think about all the physical traits that he's balancing to rein in and make sure, I don't know if I have all the details to fully go down that road, but LeBron, I would say, is the only other one. Like, is there another one in your lifetime that you think? I mean, Steph has had moments. I mean, yeah, well, the defensive side of the ball is obviously the thing. But, like,
as prospects, it's LeBron. It's probably Luka. But I think we've landed in a very classic, like a very vintage J. Kyle Mann thinking basketball place where we could do, like, a whole nother hour on where you've taken me. Because the difference between looking at these young prospects and trying to kind of like fit the outline of the roadmap to goatness, if you will, is actually very different than, oh my God, Steph Curry has created a new archetype for goatness. We didn't really fully appreciate what would happen if he just kept shooting and from farther away and did more and more and more. Jokic has this in a sense, where I feel like I was very high on Jokic relative to the community in like 2018, 2019, as he was coming along. I remember doing a podcast with the great Adam Mares, who hosts a really great show with Tim Legler these days. Mm-hmm. And we were he asked me, I made a video about him, and he asked me very specifically, he said, you have this line where Jokic, you think he could do, like, be more aggressive. Like, he doesn't always dial it up. And I'm like, yeah, you could give him the ball and he could just look to score, pressure the defense, and then force a pass every time. And he wasn't doing that back then. And you realize, like, wait a second, if you dialed that up, and this is where the out of nowhere thing comes in, and you made him Dirk Nowitzki as a shooter. We like, he just showed up to the bubble. He's like, I shoot 38% from three now and 55% from the mid-range. How would you stop it? And that's what we've seen. So I think there's these two categories, Kyle, where one of them is, as it's happening, you emerge into new archetypes. You could argue Michael Jordan was like that, right? You could argue they were stuck in a big man's paradigm at that time. And then Michael, even with Magic and Larry, Michael Jordan comes along and he's just like this scoring, rim pressure, psychotic maniac, superhero in that category. But I don't know if you, I mean, Bob Knight did. Bob Knight looked at Michael Jordan and he's like, that's the best player I've ever seen. He could be a GOAT. But I think there's a difference, if you're following what I'm saying, between like the prospect, Kareem, the prospect. You can see it on the map so clearly. The idea of Wilt Chamberlain, but even better. Could he pass better? Can he score more efficiently? Could he be a better defender? Like, that was the blueprint of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's goatness. With LeBron, the thing we always used to say is, like, if he got a jumper, it's over because of his physical gifts, his size, his explosiveness, and how good he was as a passer. Luka, maybe not quite as much, but you could just see that, like, if Luka gets a shot, could he be the best offensive player ever? Like a real deadly outside shot. And then I think there are other players that come along and you line up the blueprint and it's harder to see it, even though they're great. Like Kobe, Dwayne Wade. You're like comparing that to Michael Jordan, right? You're like, okay, it's very similar, but are they like way better as shooters or passers? Can they get to the rim quite as much? So there's almost two possible things we're talking about here. Wemby, for me, is very much in the prospect category, but what's happened in the last couple months, I think, is like, is he going to be like a weird archetype that we actually didn't see, and is that his pathway to legit being considered one of the greatest ever?
Yeah, I think he is going to create a new archetype that I don't know if anyone's going to be able to follow him because it's so... I mean, LeBron had this too, you know. I'm including, you know, physicality with, they're all aspects of your body, you know, they're all tied together. Hardware, software. The software is incredible, as we've seen. I just think that the hardware, like, I don't think that people are going to, like, the fact that he's, I mentioned this in the video when I was comparing him to Chet, is that, like, Chet lurks. I said Chet lurks and works. You don't know he's there until it's too late. He's like, he got you. He smothered you. But Wemby is much more of he's just a mountain in there. Like in the same way that Gobert is, but he's also, and I guess what I mean too is that, like, you know, the off ball stuff is, I don't think that we should underestimate that. I don't know that we're necessarily going to see him running off of, like, you know, Iverson screens, like on the baseline where he's coming around. Like, I don't know that he's going to need to be used by that like that, but it could become a big part of his game. It's interesting, man. I don't know. The rim pressure was another thing that, like, I was curious about with him early in the season. I was just like, man, this guy can't even roll to the rim without getting, like, pushed around. Like, how is he going to be able to leverage that length? The space has really alleviated a lot of that. Like, he's able to get to the rim. He picks his spots pretty well. Yeah, in terms of archetype, man, it's new because he's new. So I don't know. I don't know necessarily that this is a replicable archetype in the same way that, like, I don't know. But what archetype, like, of this type is totally, you either hit that mark or you either impersonate it or you fail. I feel like most people that try to do this are going to fail just because they're not going to have his tools, is what I'm trying to say.
I feel like so many of the great players, kind of in a sense, move into a space where they become hard to replicate. They become almost sui generis, right? I should never use Latin on a basketball show. They become like a new breed, right? They become how would you describe Larry Bird before, like, what's the archetype?
Exactly.
It's like you're anchoring him to Rick Barry, right? You're anchoring him to Rick Barry, but the reality is, even 30 years later, when we look back, if you go check out Larry Bird's Greatest Peaks video that we did, like, My wife watched it. She goes, why doesn't anyone play like that? I'm like, it's just Larry Bird. Like, there's no way to describe it. Even Magic. Like, well, I'm just a 6'8 dude that plays point guard, but also I'll like take you in the post when I need to. But also this new pick and roll thing is cool. But also I kind of should get an outside shot. But also transition. That's where it's really fun. There's always this space that they go into that is unforeseen. And I think that's what's so interesting with Wemby and maybe Jokic in real time and maybe some other player that we don't see coming down the pike. And I'm not even including... I see, Kyle, my hot take. Are we over the hour mark? This is when I can start letting him fly. My hot take is Chet Holmgren's going right to the Hall of Fame. That's my hot take.
I think that's wild at all.
I just think that guy's amazing.
I'm not trying to take the piss out of your hot take, but I think he's
just amazing. But it's to your point, there is a difference between like, do you have a pathway that I can squint a little bit and see and be the greatest player ever? That there are degrees to that difference. Actually, you mentioned something earlier, and I think of it as like a squint test. When you go back and you watch the all-time greats from, doesn't matter who, Shaq, Tim, Duncan, Michael Jordan, Bird, whatever.
The first 150 feet thing, is that what you're saying?
You go back and you watch them as rookies. And there's fat to trim, and maybe they haven't, like maybe LeBron doesn't have the post game and all that stuff. But like you watch the clips and the highlights and you see the shell. You squint a little bit and you're like, that's the dude. That he's coming, right? And I think that's what's so encouraging about what we're seeing in both these rookies, but so specifically Wemby. You can see, oh, if they're just a little better at this. Oh, if he just has teammates that could pass. Like the Spurs cannot pass. They just miss him constantly.
They're like, I don't even know if we can like articulate how bad they are passing. Like I tried to make this point too, that like I understand why they were doing it. It's just, I think Wimby's level of competence and like the timeline for him, maybe I wouldn't be surprised if they had an internal huddle and they were just like, we can't mess around with this. Like, I understand Vassell scoring tilt, Keldon scoring tilt. They wanted to get those guys. They maybe over leveraged them in a way that once they and got them some good experience, that once they did get some better fitting pieces, they could settle them back into roles that better fit them. And then they'd accrued this experience. So they have these tools that they can use once the team is better optimized, if that makes any sense. And Sohan, same thing. But I don't know. I'd imagine a lot of these. You had some thoughts about their roster, about who's even going to be in the league, which I thought was funny. But I just think when you stacked all those things together, it just made for a really tough situation. And even like a basic, like basically like backup level point guard, like Trey Jones, made a huge difference. So it's crazy to think about where this is going to go. On the Chet thing, quickly, I know we don't have time to get into it fully, but I like the self creation thing. I alluded to it a little bit. I mean, where do you think that's going to go with Chet? Are you feeling... He seems like a pretty competent dribble pull-up shooter to me.
Yes,
he doesn't shoot with a ton of movement, but you see the handle, the way he gets down, in a very similar thing, like where he can handle pressure better than people even think. Because most people were like, this is not going to work, like in the league, when you watch his physicality. But he keeps proving it over and over again. I don't know. The self-creation part of it to me is just like, they don't have to with Oklahoma City. Where's it going to go? I'm curious.
I think we haven't even scratched the surface. I think that I think you talked about his mid-range pull-up and how he already has that. You combine that with the fact that he can drive and he's got this really, really soft touch with both hands on his drives. That's the kind of stuff, and I know you've made the Pau Gasol connection before, like you add a little spin, hook, touch, that whole package, you get the footwork, he's going to get a little bit stronger and sturdier. You got a pivot, a jump stop, a turn back for a hook. He's so good at attacking closeouts. He's good enough to kind of, I wonder if he could expand the triple threat face up from the outside, if that shot is really dialed in, because for Chet, just like the range of how great he's going to be. If he ends up being only a good shooter, I think he'll be great. If he ends up being because he's 21, if he ends up being a ridiculously good, like all-time level outside shooter, we're going to have to come back and do a Chet Holmgren podcast.
He's Pau and AD. That's what I like. He's not as long as AD, but he's close. He's got some long arms. I think it's like 7'6". Have you noticed he plays off his left hip like Durant? Have you noticed that when he faces up? He clearly is a Durant acolyte, like, which Durant, which is, it begets. I mean, like, it's Durant learned that because that's how Kobe played, but like, he's got some of that stuff. I just think it's interesting.
Let's get out of here on this fun one. You had one line at the end of your video about the youngest MVP ever. Derrick Rose.
I forgot about this.
Yeah, Derrick Rose was 22 and like 4 or 5 months. You know, Basketball Reference does the February 1st dating in every year. So he was like 22 and a half-ish. Wemby just turned 20. So if he were to win MVP in 2 years, not next year, but 2 years, he would be the youngest MVP ever on our confidence scale. Let's just drop that as a bonus. How you when you said that, I was like, what did he just say?
That's what I was going for.
How likely do you think that, I mean, assuming in 2 years the Spurs have a team, we have no idea what it's going to look like, because the reason I don't think many of these players will be around is just history. When you go look at these rosters that struggle like this, that are this poor, that have these young players, and of course we can watch them and break down the film, like, you can see the issues that they have. I don't think most of these guys will be pieces on this team going forward. So, given where they are today, how realistic do you think it is that he's in a legit MVP conversation in 2026?
You're the expert on this. This is why this is hard when you... It's like going on a show about MVP's mathematics narrative. And Stephen Hawking's like, what do you think? I'm like, I mean... It's hard. That's what I was going to say. Like, everything that we've described about, like, you put yourself in a position where you're just like, are you going to rule that out? And when you're talking about an array of things that is really kind of unprecedented, are you really going to, like, with a bold face say that that's for sure not going to happen? I mean, like, LeBron between years 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 made such an unbelievable leap. And I think that we're talking about that level of intelligence and that level of range of impact. I don't think it's ridiculous for him to be in the MVP conversation. It could come down to just who's there, basically. Who else is there? Because, I think Jokic is how old? 30? How old is Jokic?
29, maybe? Something like that.
How many more MVP conversations? He'll be 29.
He'll be 29 in a couple days. Yeah.
I would say that it's very possible. You want me to go hot take and just say that I think it's going to happen? I'm not saying he's going to, like, I can't say he's going to win because there's so many factors, but I think he could become that level of player. Yeah, I do. In 2 years. I really, really hesitate to underestimate this guy.
I love this.
What do you say?
I love what's happening right now. I think I'm most intrigued by the physical growth in the offseason this year. We've seen that so many times. We saw it with LeBron. Like, LeBron was a great rookie. He was not this good as a rookie. I said it at the end of my video. I don't think there's a rookie I've seen have a month this impactful. Like, you could not easily name 20 players better in the month of January than Victor Wembanyama. We haven't seen that stuff since the 20th century. When, like, 4-year Tim Duncans and Shaqs were in the league and things like that. So part of the thing I've learned, you know, you said this is my bailiwick, like, the aging curve of these great players. I look at how good you are at 19. I look at how good you are at 21. That's a huge indicator. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about all this potential stuff with Vic, but right now, Victor Wembanyama is like an all-star level player. We can quibble and, he didn't have an all-star level first half of the season, but this upward trajectory that we're seeing. I don't think it's out of the realm. I would not rule it out, Kyle. I think the hard part is going to be what the heck kind of team is around him in the next year or two. And is he going to do this ridiculous thing where he puts them on the treadmill of mediocrity? Maybe like we've seen with the Mavs, where it's like, I'm good enough to carry you, but that actually makes it really hard to get rookies and acquisitions and trades and free agent stuff. So the roster, to me, of course, Kevin Garnett just went through this with this forever in Minnesota, where literally if you go through and break down the roster, analyze the roster, the age, the injury, the talent, the statistical output, the impact numbers, what looks like it's happening is Garnett, who came into the league as a high school player, kept getting better and better and better, and the roster kept getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and it just looks like the team is just like flat on the treadmill of mediocrity forever. So I think those are the confounders. but
it's just a function of the system. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. This system, man. LeBron had a lot of that too. Luka's going through that too. It's just it's the predicament of the floor raiser, you know. So yeah, all those things are going to impact his efficiencies, you know, because a lot of those, you know, the tracking efficiencies all are based on what happens after it leaves your hands and what, you know, and before it gets to your hands too. So those things are going to play a role. So yeah, I feel like we're both, are we crazy? I don't know. People yes. Can get mad in the, is it NBA discussion Reddit going to be like these jackasses that hate
Kate? Well, they're Cunningham, definitely, they're going to get mad.
I don't for the record, but yeah. Anyway,
Who do we hate?
There are a lot of Pistons fans that got mad at me and said I hated Cade Cunningham. I got, I know we're ending, which is ridiculous because I'm like, it's literally his biggest believer. I had a brief conversation the other day. We don't got to go into detail, but I asked an NBA shooting coach about floater threes, and he openly guffawed. And he goes, "I'll tell you what, Kyle." He goes, "If that got around to the NBA that you were going to start shooting those shots, every NBA team in the league would go be our guest." And I was like, "Interesting."
oh man,
that reaction was great.
I can't do this to people. I will say that Norm Powell took a floater three the other night against the Pelicans, and I immediately sent that to Kyle.
Yes, you did. As does everyone whenever someone takes one. But
you did this to yourself. If you want to support us, patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. That's where we've got all these fun stats on Victor Wembanyama. There you can go see Victor Wembanyama, man. He's 20 years old. He's in like the top 10 in the league already in defensive EPM, which is one of the better one-number single defensive stats we have. And Chet Holmgren is not too far behind either, and he's only 21. He is a 21-year-old rookie. I know it can be confusing sometimes. Your first year is your rookie year when you play. Heck, in baseball, this is going to really ruffle some feathers. In baseball, you can play. I don't know if they've changed this, but for years, you could play and you wouldn't be a rookie until you crossed over a certain threshold of games played. So yeah. There are baseball players that have won Rookie of the Year, like in their third or fourth year.
Jones do that? I'm trying to think.
Alex Rodriguez? He was so young when he came up. I can't remember.
This is what people want from us.
The baseball people are loving this. Yeah.
Whenever people start like drawing the lines of like what's fair for a player, I'm just like, guys, in today's basketball environment, these guys, well, we can't have any kind of pro training. It's just like, buddy, I got news for you, my man. Like in the summers, these guys, it's a global game. I'm just saying, I don't know. I just get annoyed with all that, but this was fun. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Kyle, thanks so much for coming by. Thanks to everybody for listening all the way through. And as always, hope you are having a great day.